You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome into a Wednesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw. I'm your all-around Nets expert. I covered the Phoenix Suns for 3 years back in Arizona, but I am loving my time back in the Big Apple covering the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm joined, as always, by my intrepid business partner and lifelong Nets fan, Josh Bass. Josh, how are you doing on this Wednesday night?
Gavin, I'm doing well, but I think to call me a lifelong Nets fan, I could see what if 10 years from now they're still not good and I decide to become a Knicks fan.
Well, that would be crazy, actually. I think it would rip apart our friend group, but we need the balance of some Nets fans and some Knicks fans, but I feel bad.
Closer together.
What do you say?
Wouldn't that bring us closer together?
No, I don't know. I think it's good that we have a balance. It's healthy for debate. You don't want a relationship to get too stale. You want some arguments, some passion, some fire there. But you're right. I don't necessarily want to lock you in to a lifetime of Nets fandom. So I'll stop describing you that way in the future. Well, Josh, it is Draft Wednesday. And we're going to tell you a little bit about the Draft app later on in the podcast. It is probably my favorite way to play daily fantasy now. But we wanted to honor the fact that it was Draft Wednesday and the fact that the Nets don't play their home game in Mexico. I'm going to keep repeating that until tomorrow by talking about the NBA Draft. I would say this is the beginning of NBA Draft season, as we like to say. On this podcast, I know Sports Illustrated just released their second mock draft and kind of like the first of the college season. And then Draft Express now over at ESPN, ESPN Insider, so I don't even have access to it. They reached a draft. And Josh, you're the wealthier of the two of us, so you have an ESPN Insider account. What did you think of Giovanni's list? And I can tell you what I thought of Jeremy Wu's.
Well, Gavin, first of all, I thought you were supposed to contact Chad Ford out in Hawaii and give a live update on his mock.
Oh, no, I forgot to tell you, I tried. He apparently doesn't have a cell phone anymore.
He thinks Mo Wagner's going first overall.
Yeah, that's what he's telling all the Islanders. Yeah, he's disconnected from all technology, and his island name is Big Wave, so refer to him as that in the future if you're going to talk about him.
Okay, good to know. I hope that you haven't seen the last of Chad Ford. I honestly want him to make some appearance during draft season, whatever site will have him.
Yeah, I'd like it if he like went like full out in terms of like editing his drafts, in that like he starts like editing all of his previous mock drafts to look exactly like his newest mock draft, and he like hacks into the ESPN site and like starts editing their top 100. I think that would be really good if he just like fully embraced the villain character.
Oh yeah, he's such a hack, and his analysis is always pretty bad. But there's something lovable about him. And then,
yeah,
as a child, just reading his mocks, and like when I didn't watch that much college basketball and kind of learning who it was through Chad Ford's warped perspective was always interesting. But
yeah,
now I guess we have good content on ESPN with Givoni and Mike Schmitz.
Yeah, I know. I think they're definitely probably better off for it. That being said, I'm with you. I miss Chad Ford. He's kind of like Mel Kiper Jr. I think it's Mel Kiper Jr. Yeah, where like you just kind of want him around. He's just kind of part of the background of the draft. Yeah. So obviously, I think we're both in agreement. Even though you were only nice enough to send me picks 25 through 29 of Giovanni's mock draft.
Here's the thing: I took a Hippocratic oath that I wasn't gonna distribute insider content.
Sure. Okay. No.
Yeah. You know what? I'm giving you a little sneak preview.
You're just advertising for
your referral fee.
Yeah. No. I appreciate that. Yeah, but I think generally they know what they're talking about over there, and I like Jeremy Wu's work over on Sports Illustrated. Though you disagreed with his analysis of number six pick Robert Williams. We were talking about this a little bit before the draft. I think did you take issue with the language that he has natural rim running proclivities and a strong upper body?
I don't even know what natural rim running. What that even means. I'm actually very curious
Yeah.
I'd love to ask Jeremy Blue, like, what went into his mind when he used that phrasing. But
yeah, it just sounds like he's like it definitely. It sounds kind of like a euphemism, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's onto something, Jeremy Blue. But yeah, I mean, I do think his work is usually pretty spot on, despite some unusual word choice that we have with Robert Williams. But we'll leave that to a different point because the Nets aren't going to get Robert Williams because they don't have their pick and he's way too high up in the draft for where the Raptors would select. So moving on to that Raptors selection, ESPN currently slots in at 27 because they're using the forecast of BPI.
Wait, Josh, before we get there, I wanted to go over quickly. Who are some of your, like, obviously the Nets aren't going to have the top eight pick the record would suggest, but, like, who are some of your favorite prospects so far in that top eight? Because there's been, like, a real shuffling in the top three in between DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, and Marvin Bagley. I think you could find, like, pretty equally sizable camps on all three of those guys.
Yeah, no, I think that there's really no wrong answer. Bagley was dominant against Texas. He's really shown a lot. Just being a gifted post scorer, I didn't know he had that in him. I thought he was going to be more of solely just a pick-and-roll finisher type, but he really is the real deal. And just even though he skipped a year, he skipped his final year of high school eligibility to come to Duke a year early, he's like has not shown any signs of needing to adjust to the faster college game. He's really just been spectacular to watch. And then another sleeper I like, I think Jaren Jackson from Michigan State's been a really interesting player, averaging 2.8 blocks a game, very solid shooting stroke, a good free throw shooter as well, and that's something that a lot of these big men, especially when they're so young, have a lot of problems with. So he's really someone to me that I think could sneak into the top five and pass a guy like Mohamed Bamba or pass a Robert Williams as we get further along into draft season.
Did you see that dunk Bamba had the other night, though? Jesus Christ.
He got up so high.
He's just a freak. And it's kind of I've been sorting through those top three in my mind, and like I like initially had issue with Jeremy Wu having Ayton number one because I think he's like at this point the third best player of that top three group. But I go back and forth on it because I think Ayton does have like the highest ceiling of the three of them. Like he's proven he can like legitimately shoot, and when he's shooting, driving, and like exercising every part of his game, he's just utterly dominant. Doncic, in terms of the way he plays, we've gone back and forth on him a few times, is probably my favorite guy. Is I just think he's like a brilliant passer, and there's a reason he's considered perhaps the best European prospect ever at his current age. I just think he's like a perfect all-around player, and I don't see any ways he's not at like as like a baseline very, very good in the NBA and potentially better than that. And then Bagley's been arguably alongside Trae Young, who I want to talk about a little later in this podcast in regard to the Nets, arguably the best player in college basketball, and his passing is just way ahead of where I thought it would be. He's really good at drawing double teams and then finding Wendell Carter, his fellow five-star big over at Duke, down low, can shoot the ball, and it just seems like he doesn't really have any limits in his offensive game. But I kind of question just how well all those skills will translate to the NBA because he is so physically dominant relative to everyone else at the college level, and that's not necessarily going to be true at the next level where he'll have an advantage, but it'll be a lot smaller and there'll be plenty of guys who can kind of match him. So I'm very fascinated to see how that top three sorts out. Now, Josh, I want to get into the net stuff and where those Nets guys are projected to, or well, rather, who these guys are projecting the Nets to take with that Toronto Raptors pick, and then who we like with that pick. But before I do that, I wanted to tell everyone a little bit about Draft. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than other daily fantasy sites? That's why Draft is my favorite site. No more getting crushed by the pros, and it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft are enjoying it too. Play in real live NBA Draft right now. Done in under 5 minutes and you can get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code LONETS. That's LONETS. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using that promo code. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Nets listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. All you have to do is search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with the promo code one more time, LONETS. Me and Josh are kind of trying to figure out the site at the moment, but as soon as we do, which should be tomorrow, we are going to set up a game for our Locked On Nets listeners. I know we promised that last week, but life gets hectic. So we're going to do that. We're going to get involved with you guys, kind of get in the thick of it, and hopefully you guys can win some money off of us, because that's really all I want to do with this podcast. I'm kind of like a modern-day Peter Pan. I just want to give back to the people. All right, Josh, before I rudely interrupted you at the beginning of the podcast, you were kind of getting into who these two prognosticators have the Nets taking with that pick they got over the summer from the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah. First of all, I'm kind of confused with the Peter Pan comment. Was that his mission to give back to the people?
Yeah. We're the rich. We're the ones with our podcast. We're the ones with a voice. We're the ones with the podcast. We have all the power. And then we're going to give back to the people, because they will inevitably be smarter about daily fantasy than you and I, two novices of the gambling world, and they will take advantage of us and steal our money.
So it seems like you are advocating trickle-down economics.
It's a controversial term nowadays. I don't know if I want to attach myself to it.
Okay, so moving on to less controversial topics, or maybe even more controversial.
Wow.
Okay, so... Again, ESPN has the Nets picking 27th, because that's where they project that the Raptors pick will end up, while the SI uses the Raptors' current spot of 25. Gavoni has the Nets taking Chimezie Metu. He's a 4-5 man from USC, a junior, pretty good athlete. He's kind of good in all areas, decent shot for a big man, solid rebounder, pretty good athleticism. Not going to really hurt you anywhere, but kind of finding where he's going to fit at the next level, if he can be kind of the main rim protection presence at the five, or have the offensive stretch game at the four. He's kind of an awkward fit. He's playing on a very talented USC team, and he kind of has games where he gets lost in the shuffle a little bit. But he definitely has the talent that late in the draft where I would be fine picking him. Do you have any thoughts on Metu?
Yeah, I actually love Metu's game and have the last 3 years. I first saw him in the 2016 Pac-12 tournament, where he absolutely roasted UCLA, and then got to watch him a few times last year where he played against a more talented UCLA team, and also in the Pac-12 tournament, and struggled a little bit more, but was still pretty effective. And then I went out to LA one time to watch him against Arizona State. So I've seen Metu, at least in person, just about as much as any other prospect in the country, and so I'm probably a little bit biased on him because of that, and because I'm a big conference of champions head, but he's really good, and he's kind of the perfect modern big, and I'd love to see him either playing against or rather next to Jared Allen, or even if you're drafting him as a high level backup or just a roll of the dice, if you one of those people who don't think Jared Allen's going to be really good, like I think you and I potentially do down the road. But he can really shoot it. Again, is solid inside, especially considering the fact that he's not that thick, and is a legitimate rim protector. So in a lot of ways, I think he's kind of Jared Allen 2 years down the line, which makes a lot of sense, because he's a year, or I guess a year down the line, because he's only a year older than him. But you kind of get my point. He's actually very similar to him. So in that sense, I guess I'm maybe a little confused on why he'd be a great fit for the Nets. But as a player, I'm absolutely set on him. I think he's really, really good, and he's a lot of fun to watch if you haven't gotten a chance yet.
Yeah, I think one of the few games I've watched of his was the round of 32 game last year in the NCAA tournament, where he roasted Baylor, finished with 28 points with 11 of 14 shooting. Really nice mid-range game, can score inside at the college level. Reminds me a bit of Bobby Portis, in that he's kind of an all-around big man, but I think he could struggle with efficiency when he gets to that next level. So I think he would be better served as a backup, but having a good backup center is very important. We saw earlier in the season when Timothy Mozgov was the starter for the Nets, that he was kind of sinking that whole lineup. So if a guy like Metu can come in and give solid 10 to 15 solid minutes at the five position, and you have Jared Allen, who you think can grow into a legitimate starter in this league, then you should be set.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I just think that shooting makes him such a clear fit for the Nets, because we've already seen it with Allen. The Nets are trying to draft bigs who, even if they're not great shooters in college, have a natural touch. And Metu, I'm not quite sure what his numbers are this season. I'm looking it up right now, but
he's made three threes this season, taking six. So
oh, really? Okay. He was like, I feel like he was like shooting, or if he wasn't shooting more in past years, he's definitely comfortable on long twos. My point is, the guy does
shoot long twos. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy does have a natural shooting touch, and that's really all the Nets are looking for, because Jared Allen, he wasn't shooting threes at Texas, and he's already made one in the NBA. So I think the Nets are comfortable kind of creating that in a guy, but the natural ability has to be there. And with Metu, I think it is.
Definitely. So let's move on to the SI mock, where the illustrious Jeremy Wu had the Nets taking...
Do we need help on pronunciation? Because I got this down.
I mean, you want to go for the initial shot? I think I'm a pretty good pronouncer.
Rui Hachimura? Mura? Okay, maybe
Rui
I don't.
Hachimura?
Rui Hachimura.
Yeah, I love that. Remember this time, or not this time last year, but in June when we first started the podcast, when you were butchering French Frank's name.
Frankie Nicotine, baby. I'm only saying it like that. Rui, a guy I guess I've never watched him play, though. I was in some of the press conferences with Mark Few at the Final Four last year, and he kept, even though Rui was a redshirt, his name like kept coming up, and he was like, they were asking, like, how do you, like, replicate some of North Carolina's athleticism in practice? And he said, we have a guy that we think has, like, an NBA build and an NBA future in Rui Hachimura, who, again, originally from Japan, but and not a country really known for producing NBA talent. But he has the build and seemingly, like, a pretty tantalizing skill set, but we haven't totally seen it yet. For Gonzaga, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong here, but from what I've followed on the Zags this season, he's kind of gotten inconsistent playing time.
Yeah, I mean, he plays a pretty decent amount. Obviously, he gets in foul trouble a lot, so that's really hampering him. He had a really good game against Texas where I think he dropped like 15 or 16 in the first half even. But they played really good competition, and he has not been exceptional. Personally, I would not want him on the team. He's only had one block this entire season, just does not seem to have a lot of athletic indicators that are going to be projectable to the next level. Three-point shot, still a work in progress. Last two games against Creighton and Villanova, he only scored 8 combined points, so he can get taken out of the game very easily. And I think especially on a Gonzaga team that could really use him to step up, because obviously with the loss of guys like Karnowski and Zach Collins from last year, they really needed his presence inside, and he hasn't been kind of the breakout performer like Mark Few has hoped that he would be.
Yeah, and again, 6'8", 225, so the build is there. He's been scoring really efficiently this year, putting up, I believe, 50-40-90 splits. So, I mean, I guess, like, over a low volume, the marks are there. But, I mean, again, you're right, he hasn't proven anything against the league competition yet, so... He's a guy that would be a total project at this point, which, again, you can argue that's like kind of what the Nets are looking for, and that's kind of been their pattern in recent drafts. So I see where Jeremy Wu is going in projecting him to the Nets. I don't know. I just think it's like we're a year away from like seeing like, and again, this is, we're talking about the draft like almost a year or 8 months, 9 months in advance. So inevitably, there's going to be some projection involved, but with him more so than a lot of other guys that the Nets could potentially take. He could be going 10 spots higher, or he could be going undrafted at this point.
Draft Express has this guy at number 50 in their
ranking. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's a wide, wide range where he could be picked right now. So I think it's too hard to pin him in as someone the Nets could legitimately be looking at this point, just because we only have like 5 games of data where he's taking more than 6 shots.
I think he could be someone that emerges down the road, but I don't would even come out this season. I feel like, especially a lot of those Gonzaga guys, Zach Collins being the exception, the ones that do kind of have NBA futures and that eventually get drafted, thinking like a Nigel Williams-Goss, who I think was taken at the end of the second round this year. They kind of hang around for a few years, develop their skill set under Mark Few, dominate the West Coast Conference, and then they come to the NBA.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He could... I mean, it'll depend on him. Like, there is like a window there for him to kind of break out, because that Gonzaga team doesn't really have a go-to guy necessarily. So maybe he turns it up in the second half of the year. But yeah, some guys are like, if they think they're gonna get drafted, they're going to the league, and more power to them. But I think he could potentially use another year. All right, Josh, we've talked about the guys the experts have the Nets taking. I want to get into the guys that we think the Nets should take. But even before we do that, let's talk about Locked On Giants. For my money, this is the most exciting time to be a Giants fan for the first time in well over a decade, in about 14 years. They have a new general manager and coach simultaneously. I don't even know if they had a new GM and coach last time. Coughlin might have superseded Accorsi. But, they again, new opening for a GM and a coach simultaneously. Where are you going to get all the Giants analysis and news that you want? Well, on our sister podcast, Locked On Giants, daily breakdowns of everything that is happening in Giants land. You want to hear takes on Eli Manning coming back as quarterback. You want to hear the latest on the GM and coaching searches. I know I do, so I listen every single day, and you should too. Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Highly encourage you to check it out. All right, Josh, who do you like for the Nets in this NBA draft?
Hold on, Gavin. I'm taking my jaw up off the floor that you said this is the most exciting time to be a Giants fan when they've won two Super Bowls in the last decade. And you're saying now is the most exciting time.
Yeah, because there's like an air of mystery. Obviously, it doesn't. I'm saying I should have clarified, I guess, in terms of off the field stuff. Though Plaxico Burress shooting himself in the leg accidentally was pretty thrilling. I think this is up there. I mean, the Super Bowls were a lot of fun. Give me off the field drama. I know Eli is going to beat Tom Brady any day of the week, but the Giants, one of the most stable organizations, generally, not just in football, but in all of sports, I think it's pretty interesting that for the first time, and again, over a decade, everything is suddenly kind of flipped around.
Gotcha. Okay, so you like that blank slate. You're the type of guy in video games that can tear it all down and then build your team back up.
100%, yeah.
Okay, so for my, I'm going to give you two guys I like.
Grayson Allen.
Not Grayson Allen or LiAngelo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we're going to be going up north to Canada for both of these guys. First of all, Justin Jackson, not the guy that's currently on the Sacramento Kings. He's a sophomore at my alma mater, Maryland. And if you look at his stats right now, they're not pretty. Shooting 38% from the field, 23% from three. Rebounding up, but yeah, he's had an abysmal season, especially when people were touting him as pretty certain lottery pick. But here's the thing. Maryland's coach, Mark Turgeon, is terrible. This guy is a prototypical four-man at the NBA, a terrific jump shot when he has space, very good defender, long, can guard multiple positions. But he's playing the three right now, and he has really no ball handling instincts to speak of. Think of Justin Jackson like a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson with a good spot-up three-point shot. But he's not getting the chance to show that to the NBA. So luckily for Nets fans, he's slipping in the draft. I think he's a good target for the Nets to pick up. And, you know, it'll be nice for me to root for a Maryland guy on the team.
Yeah, doesn't your boy Jonathan Charks have him as, like, a top five pick?
I don't know if he did.
He did before the season.
Have it now would be insane after the season that he's having so far.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. I want to give Charks credit because we made fun of him last year for having OG Anunoby as a top five pick, and now he's kind of playing, if not like a top five pick, like a top 10 guy.
That's so ridiculous. It's like saying, it's like saying after the fact, should Isaiah Thomas have been a top five pick, like knowing what we know?
Yes.
Clearly not. Yes. No. But at the time, you can't fault teams for not drafting him until
he had an NBA body, pick. Josh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then second guy, a freshman, I believe he was a McDonald's All-American, Nikhil Alexander Walker. First of all, great name. Love the hyphenation. I think his cousin goes to Kentucky, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a guy that fits the Nets system very well. He's a point guard, good ball handler, but he's 6'5". So we know that the Nets like tall point guards that can share the court together, and he would certainly be able to do that. Very good three-point shooter, shooting about 43% from three, averages 15 points a game. I'm not sure if he would come out because it seems like he might be more of a two-year guy, because next year on Virginia Tech, he'd really be able to take the leap and possibly raise his profile a lot. But he's someone that is a very fluid offensive player and doesn't really have a weakness. He can get to the basket, he can pass, he can spot up, and that's perfect for Kenny Atkinson's system, who really thrives on having as many multi-dimensional ball-handling threats that can also shoot. So I think he'd be a great fit with Spencer Dinwiddie, Jeremy Lin, D'Angelo Russell, whoever the Nets decide to have out there and bring back for next season, because obviously there is some struggling going on, obviously, with injuries for Jeremy Lin and D'Angelo Russell. But I think Nickeil Alexander-Walker would be a great guy that they could plug into their system and help him develop along the way, because we know that Kenny has had great success with point guards. Look no further than Dinwiddie.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you, and especially big point guards. Like, who would be better to mentor a guy with that kind of game than Dinwiddie, who's just seemed this season to finally put the whole package together and figure out how to use his length. I prefaced it earlier, Josh, the name that I'm going to throw out there should be no surprise to you or anyone who knows of my Oklahoma fandom. And I have a feeling by draft time he's going to be projected to go higher than this, so this might be the only time all year I get to talk about him. But I am all in on Trae Young, who I really do believe is a poor man's Steph Curry in, like, the best possible way. As a true freshman, Josh, true freshman, leading the country in scoring, third in the country in assists. I don't ever remember a freshman doing that. Frankly, I don't remember any player who was in the top five in the country out of 300-plus schools in both those categories for a substantial amount of time. Now, he's playing in a way that, like, no NBA team is going to let him play until he's way into the league. They're letting him play like Steph Curry on crack right now. He's shooting whenever he wants. He's holding the ball. I think he's like a 37 usage percentage, which is just out of this world. It, like, puts Russell Westbrook to shame. But somehow he's taking on that load as a true freshman who's frankly undersized at about 6'2", 180 pounds, and he's using it efficiently. He's hitting the three ball at over a 40% clip despite taking 30-footers off the dribble, not really having a lot of help from his teammates in terms of getting open shots. Is finding ways to get to the basket, and even though he's not finishing efficiently, is consistently getting to the foul line. Had a 40-point game earlier this year where he went 17 of 18 from the charity stripe. And you watch this guy off the dribble, and you see the swagger. You see the ability to attack someone, dribble back out, and just pop a three right in their face. I don't think I've seen a freshman with this kind of confidence and that kind of shot-making ability since someone like Steph Curry. If there's another example, you could throw it out there. I might be forgetting someone, and there might be some mid-major guys like Lillard and McCollum when they were at Weber State and Lehigh, respectively. Maybe they were like that. But at a Power 5 program, I don't really remember anyone coming in and dominating college basketball to this degree. The only one I can think of that's similar recently is Marvin Bagley this season. But he's been absolutely amazing. There are real NBA concerns about his athletic profile, but purely based on production and I think his upside as the shooter, the Nets would be smart to invest in him as a backup point guard, and I think someone who's kind of the platonic ideal of their system and just really the perfect modern player.
Yeah, I love this dude.
Wow, okay. I expect to hate.
He's taking 9 threes and 9 free throws a game. That's insane. Like, his shot profile just makes NBA stat geeks
their pants.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but they are ecstatic about this guy. I'm sure Daryl Morey loves him. He's kind of, this is playing style, a little bit like Jimmer Fredette, a little bit like Steph Curry, as you mentioned. Also, you could say he's like Tyus Jones on an NBA Jam simulation constantly. just gunning up threes, and this dude has deep range. I heard hype about him coming in.
For me.
But it's crazy that he's been this good, this fast. And currently, I think a lot of mocks have him in the early 20s. I think that's probably going to increase a little bit. There's a ceiling for how high he'll get drafted just with his physical profile. I really don't see him ever getting drafted in the top 10, but he's someone that could sneak his way into the lottery if there's a team that really needs dynamic point guard play and some shooting.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I don't think he is the athlete or is ever going to be the athlete that Steph Curry is. But Steph Curry, if think about it, if he'd come out his freshman year at Davidson, would he have been like a second round pick? Like, I'd be really kind of looked on YouTube and I couldn't really find that much from his freshman year, but I'd really be interesting to watch clips of the two of them side by side as freshmen. And again, it really is tough to project because you're right, for every Steph Curry there is there's only one Steph Curry, there's 100 Jimmer Fredettes and guys that like were just totally dominant shooting a bunch of threes at the college level. And for whatever reason, for Jimmer, it was mostly defense and inability to really do anything else. It didn't totally translate to the pros, but I just think with how quick his release is, Trae kind of translates a little bit closer to the Steph path of things. And again, like, Steph Curry didn't walk into the NBA as an A-plus athlete. He's still not an A-plus athlete, but it's clear he worked just ridiculously hard on his core and even his upper body, and he's transformed himself into a completely different guy physically than when he came into the league. And while I don't think Trey could get that far, it'd be foolish to totally doubt him, because with modern training, these guys do become different people almost as their career goes along. And if he can do that, and he can turn into someone with the explosiveness to be effective around the rim, then I frankly think he should be a top 10 pick, and he'll be totally out of the Nets' reach. But that's obviously not going to happen in 1 year. And if he does come out as a freshman, I think the Nets could potentially go get him by trading up. All right, so obviously these are kind of early takes on the Nets draft. Josh, we are about to wrap up because I've already kept you from Are You the One for 5 minutes too long. But just very quickly, because I want a controversial opinion to end this podcast. What do you think about the idea of Grayson Allen going to the Nets? Because he's projected right in the range of that Raptors pick as of now.
Here's the thing. I don't hate it, but I think that he needs to go to a team that has a lot more sort of like a winning culture, where he's not going to be put in the spotlight right away. I feel like with the Nets, he immediately comes there, and that's all the media is talking about. But, you know, he is a good player. He's a great three-point shooter. He's a pretty good athlete. He gets to the basket really well, can finish, and can honestly just yam on some people, which is not something that you expected when you just look at the guy, because he doesn't look too athletic, the Ted Cruz look like. But yeah, he's a solid passer, a little undersized. I think he's more of a two guard. He kind of struggled when he was playing the point. It was kind of awkward, the fit between him and Luke Kennard and Jason Tatum last year. But it seems like he's found his fit with this current Duke team, and how could you not with all the talent around you? But listen, I wouldn't take him in the first round, but I think that if he is there early second round and the Nets want to pull the trigger, I wouldn't have a problem with it, because I do think the guy has the talent to be an NBA rotation player.
Yeah, I'll throw this out there. He's been a dick for 4 years in a winning culture. I think maybe he could use the humility. Maybe he could use the losing culture. But I do love his competitiveness, and not that that's an element the Nets lack, because I think Spencer Dinwiddie brings a lot of those qualities. But it's always good to add more of those guys, again, if the Nets interview him and they don't think he's a jerk. All right, Josh, I will let you go. Get to watching the season finale of Are You the One? Again, a show Josh and I both love and highly recommend. We'll be back. We'll record again tomorrow, and you'll get it on probably sometime Friday or early Saturday morning, depending on when we knock that one out, on the Nets' first Mexico City game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. For Josh, I'm Gavin. Peace out.